Hey, yo, how's it going? Name's Joey, Joey the roofer. I roof. Me and the guys at Lucky Levi's Paint and Roofing Tile up in Galilee. Maybe you've used our services before. My gramps did roofs. My pop did roofs. I do roofs. I hope my kids will do roofs. It's a family tradition, you know. There's some pride involved. A couple of years ago, we was on a roof job over in the Decapolis, one of them shiny new cities that the Romans are building. And we took our lunch break at Herod's Happy Hour Bar. And one of our guys, Tommy, he came back a little too happy from Happy Hour, if you know what I mean. He just got engaged to a really nice gal named Anna. And he was all excited about the wedding coming up and all, and he just kind of sucked down a few too many. And anyway, we get back on the job, and he proceeds to fall off the scaffolding, and he got hurt real bad. Couldn't move his legs no more. That killed his job with us. That killed the wedding. Tommy wished it had killed him. He's scraping out a living of some kind now. He begs for coins at the Capernaum village gate. We only get to see him about once a week or so, but hey, we're all still good buds, you know what I'm saying? We're still tight. We get together at one of the guys' homes to eat and talk and have fun like the old days. But it's not like it used to be. Every time we're sharing how great things are, we look over at Tommy and he just has a cloud over his head. He feels, humiliated. That's the fancy word. Especially when we carry him to get to the gate for begging in the morning. He feels like he let all us guys down. That he let his fiance down, he let his parents down, he let his fiance's parents down, the community, everybody. All of that is on his shoulders. He feels like he just don't belong no more, anywhere, to anyone. He's really, really lonely. And get this, so we go to see a priest, to see if maybe the priest could at least make him feel a little better, maybe do something. And the priest says to Tommy that God is punishing him with paralysis for his sins. God paralyzed him because he got excited about his wedding and had a couple too many somethings. Have you ever cold cocked a priest? I was this close. And then I thought about punching out God for being such a vindictive joik. But I don't know how you punch God. So Tommy's stuck, and he's guilty, and he's angry, and I guess all of us are. That is, until last week. Get this. We hear about this Jesus guy from Nazareth. Pretty rough town up in the Northeast Kingdom. That he's moved into town here on the lake, Capernaum. He's got this reputation for being real smart and able to fix people up just by touching them, you know? So I get this whole idea, okay? I get hold of Dee Dee and Marky and Johnny, and we all call in sick to work. We run over to Tommy's favorite begging spot, and we each grab a corner of the mat, and I tell him, change of plans today, Tommy. And we run as fast as we can, not as fast as we can with a mat, across town to the house where Jesus is staying. And holy camoly, we get there. It's a couple of hundred people crowded outside the house. Every bent over, blind, deaf, leprous, demon-possessed so-and-so in all of Galilee seems to be there. All pushing in to get touched and healed by this Jesus guy. Are we ever going to get Tommy in the front door to see him through this crowd? Forget about it. So we decide to go around to the back of the house to get away from the crowd, and we climb up on the roof to be alone and think a little bit. Johnny pops open a few cold ones, you know, to help us think a little bit. And we think. We pop open another one and think some more. And we think, if we're realistic, we should just go home. We should have got here earlier. We screwed up. We think, if we want to be all polite and respectable-like, we'll go down onto the street, take a number, and stand in line in the noonday sun, and maybe we'll see this Jesus guy like maybe next Wednesday. Don't know what to do. I look up at the guys. They ain't saying nothing. And I look at Tommy, and he ain't saying nothing. But he's got this look in his eyes, something so deep and hungry that I gotta do something, anything to make things better for Tommy. I'm so frustrated and helpless that I kick one of the tiles on the roof. It pops right out. That ain't right. So I say, hey, pretty crappy job on the roof here they did, huh? Hope we didn't do this job. And Didi, he gets this funny look on his face, and he says, maybe we can make it our job right now. And he but grabs a tile and pulls it right out of the roof and tosses it over to the side. And then Marky gets the same look, and he pulls up a tile. And then I get this ting in my chest. Not like pain, but more of a, like a fullness. A something that says, we got to do something now. We got to do something big for Tommy. Maybe something reckless. Maybe something stupid. But we got to do something big. So I grab a tile, and I grab another tile. And then Marky's got this big honking stick. And he goes at it. And then all of a sudden, all four of us are attacking that roof like there's no tomorrow. We go through the tile, we go through the lath and the plaster, and we're getting sweaty and dusty in the hot sun. But when I think about stopping, I look over and I see Tommy almost vibrating on his mat, looking nervous and hopeful and crazed all at the same time. We know we're true to ceiling when we can hear the screaming. I peek down through the little hole we made, and oh, what a sight! A plethora of professors are scattering from below me, covered in chunks of cold plaster. They scream some choice words up at me that I know they didn't learn at religion school. They look up at me panicky and scandalized and angry. And when my eyes adjust a little better to the dark, I see a room full of very scared, sick people, now covered in plaster Deutz. And all of a sudden I realize that our little stunt has destroyed a quiet and maybe sacred moment for a bunch of hurting people. I feel this flood of shame come over me. I feel fear in my gut. I want to run. I want to escape off the roof to the safety of the crowds. And suddenly I don't care about Tommy or the guys or nothing. I'm just scared. I just want to run. And then I look down and I see him. Him, the Jesus guy. He's the only one in the room down there still sitting. And he's got plaster and sticks in his beard and in his hair. But instead of rage, he's looking up at me with something so deep and loving and real that I have to turn away. Suddenly, somehow I know with him I don't need to run away. Without a word or a nod, he gives me this feeling of being, accepted. Completely accepted. Completely loved. Completely complete. I know that sounds stupid. I don't know. It's weird. And it's great. And it's weird. All my fear is gone. I turn to the guys and motion for them to make the hole bigger. And there's more yelling from downstairs. The owner, this time, he's going, "My roof, my roof!" And he's yelling at us, "My roof!" And I yell back down, "Do not panic! We are professionals!" Even Tommy thought that was funny. And in a few minutes, we'd done it. We made the hole big enough, and we attached ropes to Tommy's mat, and we let him down real slow and gentle-like. And everybody in the room is freaking out completely, except this Jesus guy. He's just smiling the whole time like he's got a secret he ain't telling nobody. I can't remember much of what was said then. Jesus said something about Tommy's sins being forgiven, and the religious guys, they start yelling at him instead of yelling at us. Hey, I don't know nothing about religious arguments. All I know is that when the yelling and the arguing was done, Tommy walked out of that house. He walked out healed. And you know what? I think I came down off of that roof healed too. Now look, I'm not the kind of guy who likes to talk about feelings and stuff, okay? Just ask my wife. I especially don't like talking about my feelings and stuff. Just ask my wife. But I gotta tell you, something happened to me up on that roof. When I first looked through the hole we made in the roof, that sick feeling I had when I thought, "Oh, I screwed up again," it just brought back everything inside me that feels like I'm just not good enough. That I'm a disappointment to someone, that I'm a fraud, I'm fake. It brought up every time I ever wanted to hide because of my shame. When I was little, whenever I did something wrong, my grandma always pointed her bony little finger at me and said, "Joey, God sees every bad thing that you do." Scares you when you're little. Tommy felt that kind of shame all the time, especially after that priest said that God broke Tommy's spine as punishment for something only God saw, I guess. I ain't got time for a God like that. But this Jesus, people say he came to Capernaum to teach us what God is really like. And it's not like the God of the priests. And that look he gave me, like he knew me and understood me and he loved me, I ain't never felt nothing like that. If that is how God really is, if God knows everything about me and understands everything about me and loves me anyway, loves me through all my junk and through all my mistakes, through everything, well, that ain't my grandma's God or the priest's God. Maybe that's the real thing. If God looks at me anything like Jesus looked at me, it makes me want to be more, to be better. Not because I'm supposed to obey a bunch of stupid religious rules. It's just that for one moment, I saw myself through the eyes of someone who loved me totally and accepted me totally. And nothing can be the same after that. And you know, this week, it seems like nothing is the same. Everything's different. It feels like everything's new. Tommy said the wedding is back on. But more important, he says, he feels like he belongs for the first time in his life. He said, and he's better with the fancy talking than I am. He said, I'm healed. He said, I'm healed into myself. I'm healed into community. I'm healed into God. I don't know about any of that. I'm just Joey the roofer. And I'm just glad Tommy's happy. Now, if you'll excuse me and the guys got a roof to fix before nightfall. And this time, Tommy's gonna help. Am I inside out? Excellent. I did that on purpose because we needed another laugh line. I was reading an author named Sarah Miles this week. She's an activist, a faith-based activist connected with a church called, you'll like this, St. Gregory of Nyssa Episcopal Church in San Francisco. She works with the homeless, works with the terminally ill, with the AIDS community. She says that curing and healing are not the same thing. Curing is a human word. Curing is fixing. Curing is managing. Solving a problem on human time. And it's a great thing. That's why we have doctors. Curing is really important and wonderful. Healing happens on God's time. It's possible to be not cured and yet be healed. She says it's possible to still be in pain and sick, but be restored to a reconciled life with family and friends and community and self. She wasn't speaking about this piece from Mark directly, but it connects. She says that we are not healed by ourselves or to ourselves. We are healed into community. It is part of restoring creation to order. What in Hebrew is called tikkun, repairing the world. We're healed in community, which means that those we cast out because we don't think they're fully human, because they are old or sick or disabled, or we call them crazy, God is yearning to pull them back into the whole so that the whole can be healed. When we keep out the people we don't think are whole, it means we're not whole. That's what Jesus' healing ministry is about. It's not about miracles. It's not about waving a divine calling card that says, "Look, look, I'm the Son of God." The healings in Mark are a signpost toward what he called the kingdom, or it can also be translated the kingdom of God, where all are invited, all are welcome, all are beloved, all are made whole. For those of you not familiar with all things Methodistica right now, our denomination is in the midst of a possible schism around sexuality and gender issues. Here's a crucial thing that keeps me deeply hopeful about this little congregation. Even if the denomination may be going down the toilet, we, as a congregation, have declared ourselves to be a reconciling congregation, which means that we are saying that we are open and celebrating a folk of different ages and colors and abilities and backgrounds and genders and sexual orientations, not because it's some soft, squishy, liberal thing to do, but rather it's because the gospel of Jesus Christ tells us that it's the only way for each of us to find wholeness and inclusion and belovedness. The only way for each one of us to find that wholeness and inclusion and belovedness is for all of us to find it. I have something to learn from this person I may not be fully comfortable with. I have something to learn, and my life will be better and more complete and whole when someone that I think of as less than is in my life and in my community. To get religious sounding for a moment, I will be blessed when I walk in faith with someone who is radically different from me. Whether it's a sister from Ghana, or a transgendered brother, or an aging neighbor, or the kid on the spectrum, or the grumpy white guy in the MAGA hat. When I realize that everyone is beloved of God, I'm not saving anybody. I am being saved, and you are too.